On Sunday, March 23rd at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present the final installment as we look at the perspectives of four different women during Women's History Month. This week's guest is president of Motema Records, guitarist and vocalist Jana Herzen. That's Sunday, March 23rd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. You gaze at
me. And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Where is that? Oh, that's why. Okay, well, let's do it like this, and then we'll do that like that, and then we'll... I don't even know why that's that way, but that's the way it was, and this is the way it's going to be.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny. I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
That's right. You are indeed listening to Sugar in My Bowl. My name is Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is Jana Herzen. She is the president of Motema Records and is a vocalist and guitarist and djembe player, and she's got an interesting tale, and she does good work with Motema, and we'll hear more about it and hear about how she gets those artists on that label and all sorts of other good stuff. And we will then hear from Hank Williams in the bandstand at the bottom of this hour, right before the second hour. So stay tuned. Coming up is indeed What's Happening, the name of the show, Sugar in My Bowl, and Jana Herzen, Motema Records, lots of stuff.
Some sugar.
My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm in the offices of Motema Music with
Jana Herzen.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be in this space. Now, I want to start at the very beginning with your parents, Leonora and Leonard Herzenberg. Could you tell me about them?
Sure. They were two kids from Brooklyn, and they met at Brooklyn University, actually. And my father was a biochemistry major, and my mother was an English major. I learned that he was her math tutor. That's how they met. But he went on. They were both very bright students, and he went to Caltech. And my mother eventually followed him to Caltech. Her parents were very upset because she didn't finish college, but they decided they really wanted to be together. And she wound up eventually being his partner. They were scientists like, Lennon, Lee, Herzenberg, kind of like Madame and Pierre, you know. And to this day, and they became very world famous scientists in the immunogenetics field. And
immunology and cell biology.
Yeah, the genetics of the immune system, basically, and they really were quite an institution. They became known worldwide. My father invented something called the fluorescence-activated cell sorter, which is actually a very important device, both for research and also for medicine. Like, if you have friends that maybe had AIDS or something like that, when they say their T-cell count was low, it's actually that device which allowed to be able to count T-cells in vivo, meaning while they're still alive. And before that, you had to, like, put it in a petri dish and kind of count it by hand.
Wow.
And so it's quite an amazing instrument. You can go online, and if you Google Leonard A. Herzenberg, you'll get a whole history on this machine, the FACS, F-A-C-S. And unfortunately, my father passed away in October, so it's been a sad time for us, but we've had a lot of people from around the world. Very big life between my mother and my father and their partnership. They've traveled all over the world and have had science friends from all over. And we had a big symposium for them in February 21st, and we had a concert, a musical tribute, and then they had 2 days' worth of scientific conferences, and their students and their postdocs. The lab was open for, they just had their 60th wedding anniversary, and it was the 56th year of the laboratory.
And the music was provided by the Motema music label?
Exactly. We had a Motema all-star presentation that the Pedrito Martinez group, who had actually played at my parents' 60th wedding anniversary, which was just last summer, they came to give tribute.
Hey, chica, where might a gringo find some rumba?
Papi, te voy a llevar a Parque Trillo en Cayo Hueso.
Thank you.
Also had a Motema All-Star Band, which was Charnette Moffett and Lynn Arial and Ronnie Ben-Hur and myself and Roberta Donay. And we also had two other friends, Tammy Brown and Destiny Mohammed on harp. Those are friends of the label. And it was beautiful, really a beautiful night. And they were all musicians who had played at my parents' house and knew them. We would have big, huge music parties at that house. That was kind of one of the fun parts about that.
I actually saw some of the footage from the tribute, and the harpist was a part of it. I really enjoyed that. That was nice.
Yeah, Destiny is really talented. She's based in the Bay Area. Lovely.
So your parents were involved in a group called the Federation of American Scientists, formerly called the Atomic Sciences. And they apparently were involved in radiation research.
Yeah, when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the general public wasn't really understanding the effects of fallout. And so my father was on the commission that really studied the genetic effects of it and the ongoing effects. So that was many years that he was on that commission. And they were understanding how dangerous radiation was. You know, a lot of people didn't know. And so then they, you know, remember the whole duck and cover, as if that was going to help us. You know, and they were fighting the propagandists that were out there. And they've always been involved in a certain amount of left-wing political activism. And I really definitely grew up inside of an activist household. And they were involved in the anti-war movement. And they were involved in a lot of anti-McCarthy situations, speaking out. You know, they've always fought for civil rights. And they were involved in the very first of the affirmative action programs at Stanford University. They ran a laboratory at Stanford University for 56 years. I think it was 56 years that they had been there.
It was the Herzenberg Laboratory.
That's right. And my mother continues to run the laboratory, and they've actually, there's now a chair. They're raising money for this chair to have the Leonard Herzenberg Memorial Chair, which would be a professorship there. And she's carrying on their work, which is still quite active.
And they're being involved in anti-McCarthy type work. I read somewhere that they left Caltech. There was a whole group of scientists that left Caltech to come to Stanford to sort of get away from having to sign some loyalty pact.
If I remember correctly, Stanford was one of the very few universities that didn't make you sign a loyalty oath. And so the number of their friends moved from Caltech and moved up there. And that was also, Stanford was just starting its medical school in 1959, which is the year I was born, actually. And my father was in the National Institute Institute of Health and did his service for the government because he was 4F. So he did his service as a scientist, and I was actually born in Walter Reed Hospital.
Wow.
and then they moved to Stanford 6 months later.
So are you the first of the four?
No, I'm not. My sister Barry was born in Paris because my father did his postdoctoral fellowship with Jacques Monod at the Institut Pasteur. And so he was deep, thick inside of the early genetics discoveries that were happening. And actually, what's interesting, my mother is reading a book right now on Monod, and apparently Monod was a very, very important member of the resistance in France. And but she's been reading this book and fascinated because she was just 19 as the wife of this young postdoc. And she'd have lunch with him all the time, and they were very friendly, and he was very supportive of this young couple. And she had no idea, really, about the degree of his participation in left-wing politics in France. And I'm sure that he also greatly influenced their political point of view, and they were very greatly influenced by living in Europe, and their minds were very much opened.
Well, you mentioned one of your siblings being born in France. How about the other two?
Yeah, my sister was born in France, I was born in D.C., and then the other two are born in California.
Your mother, you know, you're talking about the French doctor sort of helping them to form a political understanding. Your mother apparently grew up in Brooklyn. Yeah, as did your father, but she grew up, her parents were active politically.
Yeah, to a degree. Not so much her mother, I don't think, but they were very interesting folks. I loved them. Great sense of humor. Her parents met in vaudeville, Jewish vaudeville stage. They were both hoofing in a community show or something like that. But her father was an inventor, and he was actually very big in the Boy Scouts in Brooklyn. And he put together like a Jewish Boy Scouts thing, which hadn't been before. But she and her brother and her uncle in particular was very politically active, who was Irving Robinson. And Irving was a cantor, and he also wanted to be an opera singer, and he was very good friends with Paul Robeson. So he actually, I think, was very influential. He had very left-wing politics and was involved in the civil rights movement. He went to march in the Spanish...
The Lincoln Brigade,
yes. Yeah. Thank you. And he also was involved in the March on Washington, I know. He influenced my mother in a very big way, and I think perhaps others of her uncles may also have been involved in left-wing politics.
Your mother is also a visual artist.
She has done some, and she's really multi-talented. She's my first musical partner. And when I was a kid, she used to bring out her banjo or her guitar or whatever, and we would go to the classroom and we'd sing. That would be our show and tell. And we always had around the house hootenannies. We called it that back then because of Pete Seeger. Seeger never came to the house, but Mary of Peter, Paul, and Mary, I remember coming one time.
Mary Travers.
Yeah, Joan Baez, of course, was another Stanford kid. Her father taught there. It was a very arts-friendly household, for sure. And there were big paintings that my mother had up on the wall, these sort of, we called them splatter paintings. They were abstract things that she had gotten into.
Look out! What's up? Up in the sky, look up. Bottom of the world is right side up, that's what's up. Who cares who's on first? We got by birth while y'all laughing at the dirt. What's worse, you thought we were cursed. Why you thinking we get hurt by the earth? The world was second out of motion. As we round in third in motion, coming home. Revolution in a microphone. I'm not alone. History, I'll embarrass your story with a phone. We ain't gone, instead we're grown. Heard we threw y'all out trying to steal third again. We men, women, and children to understand your first world plan is a sin. Third world revolution, inevitable solution for first world pollution. Say it again, our scientific powers outrun our spiritual power. We have guided missiles and misguided men. That's what Martin Luther King now. Brother Kill Scott Heron, he got something to say now.
Revolution. And we're standing at the gate. Come on, you can add to the solution.
Right on.
While the world is changing, change the world.
1965, a little Rob, the great awakening, the dream state was in. The hoods were stressed, yeah. Young kids quit the polar tech, but constellations change, concentration game. Two worlds contemplate the game. More artistic, more bars were vivid. Social equality, joy with physics, psycho mind, spiritual sign. It's a miracle all in the rhyme. It's the physical, let's start to climb. Before the earth starts to decline. Under Uranus, the youth are dangerous. I mean, the youth are changing. Under Pluto, the youth grows. We call people, no loopholes, the loophole. The root show, kill a priest, yo.
I got the ill of beat. It's the trilogy, revolution. It's just the means of left confusion. The more retribution fits in the air for Huey Newton. Yo, we need more recruitment, but this more deeper, much better. Yo, any type of weapon get together, mind will feature. Who designed this creature? Let's find the leaders. Don't hide the teachers. Preach the rhyme and reach ya. Rhyme the leecher. Blacks and whites, Chinese and Hispanics. One who dies is the one who panics.
And we're standing at the gate. Come on, you can add to the solution. While the world is changing shape,
change the world.
H2O blues, blue pieces of a man. Free will got shot in the mind of Gil Scott. Some see him with real eyes, but a lot of us not. It's winter in America, the black still high. Ignorance televised, but the revolution not. They never apologize for distributing rock. Chaining you to the bottom to a slave ship's dock. South Africa to South Carolina, non-stop. Don't worry, the father got him when the country stops. No one living in the bottle or the idiot box. It's 1980, Reaganomics on top. My reflections on the market, black skin moving target. Well, that's how it started with the slave ship charter. And the insurrection model, all the blessings in the process. Now the need for revolution has determined. Gil Scott Heron, Amnesia Express.
With your both parents being scientists and really deep into it, how was it growing up in that with your siblings?
They were very heavily into their work, and we didn't take a lot of vacations and things like that. My mother always thought, what I love to do is work. That's what I want to do. But we did some. We traveled to Europe with them. But usually, it was almost all of their traveling has been work-related, but then you go and do cultural fun things. Like anything, when you grow up in a situation, it's just what you grow up in. You would just know if you're just kind of like, feel like it's not fair what happened that night, and you're yelling at parents or whatever, but... You know, you don't really understand until you get away from your childhood to understand what's different and what's the same. I mean, looking back, it was quite an amazing upbringing because there was this one room in the household, a guest room, and my parents would bring people from everywhere on the planet in to work in their laboratory for these, you know, 2-3 weeks. They'd come to do a collaboration on a paper. And so I was, you know, from a very young age being exposed to people from Prague and from Poland and from Nigeria and Australia and Japan. Lots of Japanese people came through, and I really became very affectionate towards the Japanese culture from meeting not only the scientists, but, you know, their wives or their husbands, depending. And when I was a teenager, it got to be that I'd be the entertainment for the evening, and we'd all sit around, and funny songs about science were written by some of the postdocs, and we would sing, which I eventually played what I considered I used to call it the T-cell circuit. Which was, they would have some seminar somewhere, you know, and wherever, in Japan or Paris or whatever, and they say, why don't you come bring a band? I say, okay, why don't we do that? So
how did you get into theater?
Well, actually, when I was around 12 and a half, I came home one day, and there was a woman sitting in the house, and she was knitting, and she was just stunningly beautiful, very porcelain kind of features. And I really remember walking in going, it was almost like a vision. And they introduced me. Her name was Morag Hood, and she was dating one of the scientists. And she turned out to be a leading lady at the National Theatre in London. And she wrote for Time Out magazine. And when I met her, she had just starred in the BBC miniseries on War and Peace that had Anthony Hopkins. And her picture was like figured in the poster. So it was sort of a starstruck moment. And she told me that she was an actress, and she had this lovely accent. She said, Jenny, what do you do? You know, she had, how are you? She would always say. And she was very spiritually oriented. She went to an ashram in India that was the same ashram that...
Is that the Maharishi?
Yeah, I guess so. Maharishi Mahesh Yoga, perhaps. Because I'm not sure. I just know that she would go there. And
but it was the same ashram as...
Same ashram as George Harrison in his later days, in any case. So I'm not really sure that he stuck with the same guru all that time. And she kept a vegetarian diet. She became, I call her my art mother. She passed from ovarian cancer when she was just 54. And it's about 8 years ago, something like that. She really introduced me to the whole world of the arts and also to a sort of a spiritual way of looking at the world, which I hadn't really considered. And I continue to have a somewhat non-denominational spiritual view, but I've read an awful lot of Tibetan Buddhism, which has been influential to my worldview for sure. When she said that she was an actress, I really had never considered that. I probably might have been on a path to become a scientist just from growing up inside of that. And it caught my attention in some kind of way that I thought, well, maybe I would like to do that. And I started seeing a lot more theater and taking acting classes and whatnot. And little by little, I wound up stage managing, being a lighting designer. And I went to college to study theater. I went to Stanford for a couple of years, and then I went to NYU and got my degree in drama. And during that period of time, there were other students from NYU who we were all in a class together that was taught by Bobby Lupone. He played Zach in Chorus Line, and he was also the brother of Patti Lupone. And that was during the 80s when they actually were both up for the Tony in the same year. Bobby didn't get his, and Patti got hers, so that was challenging, I think, for him. But he and Bernie Telsey and six other students that were in the class, we all started this company called the Manhattan Class Company. And I really can't remember how many years this is, but I think it's 37. I know it's more than 35 because they had their 35th anniversary. It's still going. They still produce plays at the Lucille Lortel Theater. The biggest sort of claims to fame back in the day when we started it was that we produced a play called Beirut that was brought to Broadway, and another one called Wit, yeah. You know, which won the Pulitzer. And the idea was to provide an outlet for new plays to be done and to workshop new plays. And I worked as the dramaturg for the company for 10 years from when we started it and when I then moved on to start doing music after that.
And what did being a dramaturg entail?
Well, a dramaturg, it's sometimes a dramaturg is that person who kind of keeps the continuity in terms of history and whatnot. But in a company like ours where it was about building new plays, I was helping the playwrights with structuring their plays. We would put on workshops, and the actors, the director, and myself, we would do the plays, and we would get feedback and talk about what was working and what wasn't. And I would sit with the writers and just sort of help with structure ideas. And I always have a sort of a sense of structures. I see the big picture as a rule, but I also can be very detail-oriented.
How did you wind up going into music?
Well, first off, my first love was music. I started when I was 5, playing piano and singing. And by the time I was 13, 14, I was playing my guitar. I picked up guitar, and I had a natural affinity for it. And I was performing in little folk clubs or whatever, things like that. There was a music critic from Playboy magazine that I wound up performing for, and he did pull my mother aside and said, you know, she has a voice, and she has a style of her own. There's probably a chance that she could make it as a musician, but you have to watch out with kids because somebody like Janis Ian, she got eaten alive by the music industry. If you don't really know what you have to say, it's pretty hard to maintain. You know, right about then, Janis Joplin died, Jimi Hendrix died. You know, my mother really wanted me to be a musician. She was kind of pushing me in that direction, but I wasn't so sure, you know. And I think part of the reason I liked theater is it was in a group. You had people that you were working together with. But, you know, truth be told, my very first love is music, and I do look at a song like a mini play.
You started with piano, then you went to guitar. And how did you branch out into all the other instruments that you apparently play?
Well, I mean, I don't play that many. I play a little bit of percussion, and I do play didgeridoo, you know.
Where'd you pick those up?
Percussion from a bunch of African expats that I met, and didgeridoo from going to Outback Australia and becoming fascinated with the sound. When I was working in theater, I got frustrated at a certain point, partially because serving as the dramaturg, I really wanted to perform, and I actually got into a play that was called Acapella Hardcore. It was a really fun play, actually. I was excited. I got a role to perform in, but then I kept on having all these ideas about how it should be directed and telling the director, and the producers actually fired the director and hired me as the director and took me out of the play. And I was like, wow, I should be flattered, but I'm kind of disappointed. And when I was directing that play, I found myself being jealous of the singers, and one day I went, you know, better go do it, because you don't want to wake up when you're 50 and not have done it. So that was really what switched me. I really was just following my inner muse. And I also had started writing songs by that time, and I was pushing 30, and I found that I could write a song, and I thought, well, I want to make a record. So I went on what I call my musical mystery tour. I left the theater company, and I left New York at the time, and I went on a travel to Japan, Bali, Australia, and then Outback Australia, which was not on my plan. My plan was a little tour, but I met people in Australia, and I became fascinated by the didgeridoo, and I just had this desire to check out Outback Australia, and the doors just opened up for me to be able to go on a fascinating trip with this fellow who was traveling in a van, you know, going to meet some Aboriginals and make some didgeridoos. And so I wound up taking my guitar and playing for all the people on the track, and really had an amazing trip in Bali also, just learning some Balinese traditional music and just experiencing those cultures. And that's where I got into world beat music, was particularly in Melbourne. I ran into this guy when I was looking for this didgeridoo concert, and he was a tall black guy with dreads, and he offered to show me the way where I was going in the evening in Melbourne. I looked at him, I thought, he seems like a nice enough guy. And he wound up to be a reggae guitar player who came from the London scene. Toots and Maytals and all those people were his friends. But he now lived in Melbourne, and he had a Pan-African band that he was part of. And he had all these musicians. There was one from South Africa, one from Ghana. The lead singers were twins from Nigeria. And then there was one guy from Jamaica, Keith. And then there was a guy from New Orleans, a saxophone player. And they all had this band. They were playing reggae, and they were playing Afrobeat stuff. And I'd heard some Bob Marley. And I, you know, grew up a little bit on King Sunny Ade Day and stuff like that. And Randy Weston, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't really clocked into it, like I wasn't collecting the records and stuff like that. But I really fell in love with all these polyrhythms. And I started to really, Keith taught me how to play reggae. And I wound up actually playing in a reggae band for a while as a guitarist and in Santa Cruz. And I met all these African expats. I almost stayed in Australia, but I decided to come back to California. And I looked for a producer in California, started working on my first record when I was there. And it was out of there that I met these African expats. I started studying drumming. Dundun. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a wonderful teacher there. Her name was Mabiba Bayenye, and her brother, Samba Ngo. They're both from Congo Brazzaville. They were living there and teaching, and Samba had his band, and he taught me how to play all this African guitar style stuff, which I loved. And we had a little duo we were doing for a little while. And then I met this producer through them who came to work with the members of the Carlos Santana band, who I knew from being in the Bay Area. And he wound up hearing my stuff, and he said, I would love to produce you. And he brought me to Paris, and we actually recorded my first record, which was called Soups on Fire, in Paris, and with a bunch of African expats. And it's a kind of chakra. He came into my circle because he had been invited by Carlos Santana to participate at Madison Square Garden in a performance of a song called Ya Leo, which eventually wound up being the first track on Supernatural, which was a huge 30 million plus selling record. So all this stuff, the process of deciding to write my record, just kept on leading me into meeting more and more musicians, and the trip to Paris with Chakra, and I wound up playing in Chakra's band, and we actually dated for a while. And that period of time really introduced me. And so Soups on Fire, which is the record that I put out, it is world pop music. It's a mixture of a lot of different influences, blues, reggae, Afrobeat. But the lyrics are in English. I'm an American songwriter who does consider herself part of the world, you know. So
Soups on Fire was released on Motema. Was that the first?
It was. There wasn't really a label at that time. I was making my own record and putting it out, and I came up with the name Motema because I had been singing in Chakra's band, and we would sing the words Motema Ngai, and this means I love you. And I just liked the name Motema. I thought it was beautiful. And my name Hertzen also means heart, and Motema means heart. So I named the label that, and it was also meant to be a nod to African, the Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere together, those two hearts connecting. It was funny, I was dating at the time, when I put out Soups on Fire, I was dating Winston Smith, and Winston is a very famous punk collage artist. He did all the artwork for the Dead Kennedys, and he designed the DK logo, which is very famous, and the alternative Tentacles Bat logo. He's done a lot of album covers and New Yorker covers and whatnot, and he asked, what does Motema mean? And I said, it means heart in Lingala. He said, oh, I have your logo for you. And he reached in his bag, and he pulled out this logo that we have to this day that's like an infinity sign that grows into a heart. And I said, wow, that's perfect. So it's like I didn't have to do anything to design the logo. And it's been a very successful logo. People really like it.
How did you wind up in Harlem?
I put out Soups on Fire myself. DIY method, you know, and I just named the label Motema. I was hoping that I would attract a major label deal like many people are, and I was sending my record out to Island Records and all the different ones trying to get a bite. I even got a bite from Island. But then he said, well, don't hold your breath because we're not actually putting anything out this year. And I went, oh, well, great. Then at that time, Chakra went back to France and we broke up and I was just promoting my own stuff around and I hired Babatunde Lee to be a drummer for a big gig that I had. And he was one of the best drummers in the Bay Area and he's known for doing very Afrocentric stuff. So he really dug my record because it had all this Afrobeat stuff going on in it. And he was very supportive also, which a lot of the male musicians were not. And so he and I became quite friendly and he was drumming in the band. And once he was in the band, any musician in the Bay Area was ready to play with us. So we started getting quite a little thing going on there. And he had some successes with his record, March of the Jazz Gorillas. Mm-hmm. And he was really feeling he needed to put another record out. And I came into a little money at that time, and I thought, well, maybe we'll put a record out for you. And so he recommended that we record in New York with a woman named Susie Reynolds producing. And so she and Tunde picked out people for his recording. And there was Hilton Ruiz, who I really fell in love with. I'm so sorry that he died so early. And Frank Lacy.
Trombone. Columba Frank Lacy.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It was Mario Rivera, who's also passed, on saxophone, and John Benitez on bass, and Raul Midon, who was a guest, and Coco Jones was also on there, and I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. But it was an amazing grouping of New York musicians. Oh, Craig Handy was on part of it also. And that was like a trial by fire in New York, putting this thing together. We recorded at Showcase Studios out in Jersey, and I would pick everybody up in a van and bring them out every day. And Alex Blake was part of the scene for a moment, too. That didn't quite work out, but I got to know Alex during that period, too. And I just was amazed by all these characters I was meeting, wonderful people, very, very bright, kind of wild. And we produced that record, and it went very well.
Be quick. What we're listening to right now is Confrontation from Soul Pools. It was released in 2003 on the Motema label. As a matter of fact, everything tonight is released on the Motema label, just so you know. But this was 2003. Babatunde Lee's release. It's Babatunde Lee on drums. Frank Columba Lacy on trombone right now. Hilton Ruiz on piano, Mario Rivera on tenor saxophone, John Benitez on bass. Before that, we heard Revolution. It's M1, Brian Jackson, the Midnight Band. It was actually, it's from Kentia Presents, Evolutionary Minded, Furthering the Legacy of Gil Scott-Heron. And that's 2013 Motema Records release. It was Chuck D, actually, who was the lead rapper, as it were, I guess. And let's see, Killer Priest was on there. Who else? Oh gosh, I don't have a lot of time. Somebody singing, who did I see? Oh goodness. Oh yeah. Juma Sultan was on percussion. Brian Jackson on keys and some percussion, synth, bass also. Stanton Moore on drums. Martin Luther is the vocalist. Chuck D, Killer Priest, and Wise Intelligent were the MCs. And let's see, before that we heard Lengua de Abara, the Patrito Martinez group. Patrito Martinez on percussion, lead vocals. Wynton Marsalis is the guest trumpeter. Arianz Trujillo on piano, lead vocals, and Alvaro Benavides on electric bass and background vocals, Jahar Sala on percussion, and that's a 2013 Motema Records release, as was the Revolution from the legacy of Gil Scott-Heron. Before we open the show with I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, Nina Simone, the best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967, 1972, originally released in 1967, and this was a reissue in 1976. Stay tuned for more Jana Herzen on Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned.
Susie was managing Lynn Arielle at the time. She was trying to convince me to actually start a real label and start. She said, you know, I think you'd be good at it. You should really do this. And she said, I want to introduce you to somebody. So she introduces me to David Neidhart. And he had just been let go as the marketing director of PolyGram because there was a lot of bloodbaths back then because of the music industry contracting. And there were a lot of
downsizing,
yeah, which means people were losing their jobs. Right. David met with me, and he'd been 30 years in the music industry. I didn't think I wanted to start a label. It seemed like too much work. But as he explained to me everything about the business and the distribution and the retail and everything, how it all worked, and I said, well, I guess we could look at it. I said, would you like to be the papa of a record label? And he said, yeah, I wouldn't mind. That would be kind of good, you know. And so we started. He got us distribution. We went for meetings, and we put together marketing plans. We started doing things. And then a month before Babatunde's record came out in 2003 in February, he got a six-figure salary job at Narada Records, and he was gone. And I was like, wow. Just never occurred to me. It did not occur to me that that could happen to me. And so then I had to just figure out how to pick that up. And I was living in San Francisco at the time, and so it became to be that I could not actually keep running this record label from afar like that. And I thought, I really have to move to New York and really pay attention to this thing directly. And I did work with Susie Reynolds on it for a while. Susie was an interesting producer, and she was also managing some different artists, and came and worked with her here. And we were at that time on 23rd Street, and then we moved to Chinatown for a few minutes. And what moved us up to Harlem, which is interesting, is that I think it was in 2007, one of the fellows working on the label was working with Mark Carey in a partnership on a music project, and they were looking for studios in Harlem. And they found Langston Hughes's landmarked home, which is just one block down from here. It was available for rent. And they called me up and they said, hey, how about if you go in on this? You take the top floor for the label. We'll take the second floor for some studios, and we'll put a performance facility on the ground floor. And I thought, wow, that's quite an address for jazz label, you know, to be in Langston Hughes's landmark home. I was a little worried about moving up to Harlem. I wasn't so sure about it, but I looked into Hughes's poetry and was just checking out the scene. I just found myself so inspired by his work. And I thought, that'd just be such a great place. I thought, just go do it. And so we did. We had that going for a couple of years. It fell apart for a few reasons, but we had amazing. I put a Fazioli piano in the downstairs floor, and we were going to start a not-for-profit and actually keep it running like a performance facility, but for a couple of reasons, some of the people working with us weren't really straight ahead. Let's just put it that way. But we had jazz nights in there. We had hip-hop nights. We had poetry nights. We had a Sunday brunch where Mark Carey would teach youngsters how to play. He had like a youth ensemble he was teaching. Wow. And it was beautiful. I really wish to start up something like that again at some point. When that fell apart, I found a place right down the street, a brownstone floor through, and that's where we are right now. And that's how we got up to Harlem.
Was this your building?
No.
Okay.
No, I just rent.
Okay.
But, you know, we have like three times as much space up here as we would have if we were downtown. I love Harlem. Last year was our 10th anniversary, and we had shows in Monterey Jazz Festival, and also we had five artists at the Detroit Festival, and we had seven artists at Cape May, and four artists at the London Jazz Festival, and we did a big Paris week of Motema 10th anniversary week. So we really did like an international do for our 10th anniversary. And this year, I thought, okay, this year is going to be about community. I've been here in Harlem, but I have not really been getting to know everybody. And I thought, this year I'm going to go meet all of the Harlem presenters. And so we started talking to the Apollo and the Harlem stage and just sort of make ourselves known in the community because we're here. We're Harlem's record label. There is no other record label in Harlem. And I put out so much Afrocentric music, and I'll take a risk on a lot of stuff that other labels are not taking risk on, like something like Rufus Reed's, you know, Elizabeth Catlett project, which is a beautiful, talk about Women's History Month stuff, right? He just did this beautiful tribute to Elizabeth Catlett, who's a very famous African-American sculptress and activist who passed away at age 100, actually.
Amazing. A couple of years ago.
Yeah. And we put out a pretty cool project called Evolutionary Minded that was a tribute to Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson's catalog.
Actually, how do you decide who's going to be on the label?
You know, people knock on the door primarily. Like Jerry Allen, for example. Jerry knocked on the door. I was like, come in. Of course. We would like to have you. That's when I knew we were sort of hitting some kind of awareness level when Jerry Allen's manager is asking to get onto our label. And, you know, Mark Carey came before that and, Rufus Reed came, I think right after Mark Carey. These were the significant signings, I think, that made people aware that we were working with very progressive, very innovative artists. And I have three basic rules. They have to be a master at their craft, like really incredible musicianship. They need to know how to change the molecules in a room when they play. Something happens.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just jazz, like you could put that in any back room. It's something that is spiritually going on between the players and between the players and the audience. There's action going on. I always say I like cinematic jazz. And not just jazz. We do world music. We'll do soul. I will actually put out anything that I think is brilliant. And the third one, people care about making a positive difference in the world and are very authentic people. Those are the sort of basics, and then a lot of times people give you a record they've just recorded and I go, it's brilliant. Let's put it out. In that case, we're making a licensing deal. We are helping them market it. And the skills that I learned back there in the theater, I still am using today. When you are going to put out an artist, it's like I always think about not just promoting the record, but who is this person? What's driving them? What is their motivating factors? What's special about them? We write this press release. It's got to have a good beginning, middle, and an end and tell a good story. And so from that way, you know, it's something like songwriting or playwriting or whatever. A lot of times artists have an incredible story, but they don't know their own story. And we have to help them see where their special sides are, and we have to present that to the world and help the journalists know what that's about.
This is so beautiful. This is bassist Seanette Moffitt. This is called Truth from The Bridge, Solo Bass Works. And I'm usually not too big on solo anything, but Seanette Moffitt did the greatest thing with this release. Anyway, that's Seanette Moffitt on acoustic bass, and he does electric bass on some other releases. No, it's acoustic bass throughout. And let's see, before that we heard bassist Rufus Reed from Quiet Pride, the Elizabeth Catlett Project. Both are 2013 Motema Records releases. The Rufus Reed recording was called Recognition. And the vocalist was Sharni Wade. And thank you so much, Hank Williams, for that. Stay tuned after Seanette Moffitt and Truth, we will hear The Bandstand. So stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Joyce Jones, Sugar My Bowl. My guest is Jana Herzen of Motema Records. Thank you.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for March 23rd. In this segment of the show, we bring you area listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. This week's guest, guitarist and vocalist Jana Herzen, doesn't have any immediate upcoming shows, but we'll bring you anything we hear about, and you can keep tabs on her at motema.com. That's motema.com. Meanwhile, this week, organist Akiko Tsuruga's regular Monday night gig at Manhattan's Kotobugi restaurant continues. She'll be there on March 24th and 31st. Details are at kotobukineyork.com. And we'll do that one more time. That's kotobukineyork.com. Drummer Jeff Tane Watts appears with the Robert Hurst Quintet at the Jazz Standard on March 25th and 26th. See jazzstandard.net for details. On the 26th, pianist Harold Mayburn appears with the John Weber Quartet's Wes Montgomery tribute at Smoke Jazz Club. See smokejazz.com for info on this show. And you have two chances to catch guitarist Pat Metheny's Unity Band this week. They're in Fairfield, Connecticut at Fairfield University's Quick Center for the Arts on the 25th, and in New York at the Town Hall Theater on the 28th. Metheny's website, patmetheny.com, will link you to show info. And click on the schedule link at patmetheny.com. Looking much further ahead, bassist Alex Blake will be appearing with Neil Clark at Sistus Place in Bedford-Stuyvesant on April 5th as part of the Central Brooklyn Jazz Consortium's festival. See sistusplace.org for details. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, you can see the listings at the Sugar in My Bowl blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. Tonight's playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the main Sugar website also. Remember that WBAI still needs your financial support, and thanks to anyone who pledged during the last fund drive. If you still want to help out, you can pledge, starting at a mere $5, online at give2wbai.org, and we have a link at the Sugar website. This is Hank Williams signing off. We're off the air next week for the last Sunday of the month, but we'll be back on Sunday, April 6th, and have updated event listings online. Either way, we'll see you then on the bandstand.
Thank you, Hank Williams. Yes, as Hank Williams says, we will not be here next week. We'll be back on the 6th. And we're going to be focusing on poets next month. Got everything all lined up. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar Mubble, Joyce Jones. And Jana Herzon's the guest. Jana Herzen of Motema Records.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy, not a media that strengthens the government. We need a media that enriches public discourse, not one that enriches corporations.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
So how did people hear of you before all of these Grammy nominations occurred, like Gregory Porter?
Right.
You know, I mean, when you say people, there's the industry.
Well, the artists, actually.
The artists who come to the label.
Like artist, that's how they find out. Yeah. We put advertisements in Downbeat, and people are going, oh, we like this label, they're advertising, and they would show up. Because we are very active about promoting our artists, then the artists start going, well, I'd like to be on a label that really promotes me, because a lot of them don't really, you know. It's very hard to get a major label deal. Very few people get them. And a lot of the indies, they're not going to be really aggressive or highly creative about promoting because they don't have the staff or they just don't have the drive, you know, which is not to say they shouldn't be there. I mean, there's some great indies out there and they're providing something, but we really do try to work with the artist and the manager very carefully on a, you know, handcrafted marketing campaign.
I know that I've actually seen you in places, so it's like, I don't know about the other labels out there, but I know that I've seen you at events. I've seen you at events that aren't even with people that are signed on the label. I don't know whether it's your shopping, but you're actually out at events.
Well, I really do love music. I love live music. For somebody who's running a record label, I really like live music more than recorded music. I shouldn't be going on record saying that, but it's just really true. And the artists that I sign are artists who are electrifying live performers. It's very rare, because some people could be a great recording artist or a great musician, and I'm going to appreciate them, but I'm probably not going to sign them unless they have that little oomph about what's great live.
So we were talking earlier about the number of women that you actually have on the label, this being Women's History Month. I guess that's something you're working on.
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm just looking at my records here. 9, yeah. 10, yeah. 10, and myself.
Yeah.
You know, so I make 11. There are 11.
Just like the years of Motegu.
That's right. There we go. There are 11 women artists on the label, and I would say 11 and a half, because in Pedrito Martinez's group, he has this fabulous, fabulous pianist and songwriter and singer by the name of Ariadne Trujillo. And she is, if you haven't seen the Pedrito Martinez group, please make sure to go check them out online and then check them out live. If you're living in New York, they are often at the Guantanamera restaurant, where you can even still hear them for free. That won't go on much longer, and I recommend that you catch it, because they spent a five-year residency and really built up one of the most amazing Afro-Latin groups in the world. I mean, they're really taking off right now, hoping for a Grammy for these ones this year.
And if anyone is, any Sugar My Bowl listener thinks that the name Pedrito Martinez sounds familiar, he was also with Michelle Rosewoman during her New Yoruba project.
Right. Pedrito is really, I would say, as if you wanted to rate a percussionist on a scale of 1 to 10, we'll have to put him at a 12. He's really phenomenal. And Renee Marie is on the label. Now, Renee is really one of the true renegades of the scene. And this year she put out her Eartha Kitt tribute.
And Sugar listeners will know that Renee Marie has also been a former Sugar guest. And we featured the Eartha Kitt recording when we spoke to Eartha Kitt's daughter, Kit Shapiro.
Oh, great. I love, actually, Renee, by doing this Eartha Kitt project, really brought my attention, you know, fully square on to go and do a bunch of research on Eartha Kitt. And I was aware of her, but not to this degree. And also, I really came to understand how much, like, I talked to Jerry Allen about this project. I've been trying to see if I can coordinate getting Renee performing with Jerry Esperanza and Terry Lynn Carrington, you know.
That's TLC.
Amazing, right? If we could get her in to, so that may happen one of these days. That's one of the great things about having the label. The real treat. I'm a performer, and I started off to make my own music, and I did finally, you know, in 2012, put out my second record 10 years after I started the label, basically, put out a record, which is a duo project with Charnette Moffett.
Right. The bassist, Charnette Moffett.
And it was nice.
Yesterday, just a photograph of yesterday, and all its edges folded and the corners faded sepia brown. And yet, it's all I have of our past love. A postscript to its ending. Brighter days, I can see such brighter days, when every song we sang is sung again, and this time we know. Again, and you're near. I can remember the rain in December, the leaves of brown on the ground in spring. Filled with joy, where I yesterday.
Scary putting out my own record on my own label that had built with all these amazing stars, but I had to do it because I was unhappy that I didn't want to have to just squelch my own thing because I became the president of this label. It felt like, wow, but I got a lot of nice reviews and I've been getting out to do some performing and really enjoying doing it. Charnette Moffett did a great job as a bassist. He has a solo bass project that came out last year too that has been getting phenomenal feedback live. I mean, he can really hold an audience for an hour and a half solo bass.
And he's on Will Calhoun's recording as well.
Yeah, he's on Will Calhoun's recording that came out. And, you know, Charnette has played with everybody, McCoy Tyner and Ornette Coleman and all these major.
Yeah, but since we were talking about the Motema label, right, I just thought I'd, you know, throw in Will Calhoun's.
Yeah. Now, Will made a beautiful record. And Mark Carey was on that record as well, right. Also on the label.
Right.
We called Mark Carey our MVP last year, most valuable pianist, because he played on Charnette's record. He played on Will's record. Right. He played on David Murray and Macy Gray, David Murray Quartet. And then he also had his own two records, which one of them was a tribute to Abby Lincoln,
right,
which I think should be mentioned, Women's History Month. Right. Beautiful piano.
Yes, so we featured that release on Sugar Mobile. We featured a lot of Motable. Let me just put it like that. We've included artists like Lakeisha and Mark and Jerry Allen and, you know, several folks and their recordings that they've had on the Motable label. We featured the Abby Lincoln recording during an Abby Lincoln special that we had presented. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, we appreciate it. Speaking of Lakeisha, by the way, she's going to be featured May 10th. At the Apollo Cafe, where she's going to be participating in the Harlem Shrine Festival, and she's going to be honoring Small's Paradise. And interestingly, we recently signed Michael Carbon, and Motema is curating the show at the Apollo. And I thought, you know, maybe she should have Michael Carbon sit in as a guest because he's an amazing drummer, of course. And he played on, you know, from 1967 to 68, he was in the Motown House Band.
Yes.
So we know that means he played on a lot of those records we loved. And so I thought he would sit in very nicely in her band. And then I said, did you ever play at Small's Paradise? And he said, oh, yeah, I was the house drummer for quite a while.
Wow.
So I thought, oh, that's cool. That's nice. So he's going to talk a bit about that at the event as well.
And Michael Carvin is also a former Sugar guest.
Ah, there we go. Well, we just traveling in the same circles is what's going on here. Jerry Allen, who really is, you know, one of the foremost pianists of the world, and this year she put out her Motown tribute record, Solo Piano Driven, because there's a few guests on there.
Yeah,
beautiful trumpeter. What
Marcus
is this?
Belgrave.
Marcus Belgrave.
Yes.
Her inspiration.
Yeah.
One of them. Yeah.
Very, very beautiful. Yeah. And Jerry actually just put this amazing show on at Harlem Stage, which is a tribute to Mary Lou Williams, who, of course, is one of the most important women jazz pianists and influencers ever.
And Jerry had a release, Zodiac Suite Revisited.
Right, right. Yeah, so Jerry's been a real champion of Mary Lou Williams, of the legacy of Mary Lou Williams, and a real champion for women in jazz. And, you know, Lynn Arriale is on the label, and she's a really very, very well-respected woman, both teacher and pianist. A lot of the artists on the label actually are very dedicated teachers. I will give a special consideration to somebody who is actually seriously passing on the torch, not only of, you know, the chords and the structure and all that, but the spirit torch. Like Rufus Reed is a good example of somebody like that. And I do try with the label to really present people who are coming out with something that's a really innovative vision.
How did Randy Weston come to the label?
Actually, Todd Barkin, who is an impresario for many, many years in this music, started off in the Bay Area. He started Keystone Corner, which many jazz musicians talk about as their favorite club ever in the United States. And Todd then became the programmer at Dizzy's Jazz at Lincoln Center. And Todd, actually, I thank him very much because he used to invite me to come. I had to be in that area every Wednesday, and he would say, just come on by. And when I started the label, I did not know very much about jazz, and I didn't know the players. And through the process of dropping by Dizzy's on Wednesday nights, I started to see everybody because he was booking everybody through there. And I would meet them and hand out a card and just kind of make myself known. And one day I went to see Randy Weston. I had never seen him live, though I had grown up listening to him. And Todd came over and he said, you know, I just made a deal with Jazz at Lincoln Center. And if you wanted to license this recording, you could have it for $1,000.
What?
Well, that was just for the license, okay? I still had to get it mixed, and I had to pay the musicians, okay? So it wasn't like it came out. But still,
yeah,
that was
yeah, but, you know,
for $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a naming right. But I went, wow, interesting. And so actually, TK Blue,
the saxist and flautist. And
right, who has been the music director, worked with Randy for many years, ever since Melba Liston, another amazing woman who influenced jazz. Todd introduced me to Randy and said, you know, you should have this woman put this project out. And Randy wasn't really that interested in putting another record out. But it was the year he was putting his autobiography out. Right. And I said, Randy, you've got to.
Right.
You have your autobiography coming out. And if we put a publicist on this, we can really make some noise for you. And TK felt the same way. And it was also a very special recording with Lewis Nash was in there with them. And it had been such an amazing night. So me and TK just basically wouldn't take no for an answer, and talked him into it. And then he actually had really the best year between his autobiography coming out and then having a very concerted campaign on him at the same time. And we cross-promoted with the book and did all these things.
Yeah, Laura Rice was working with him as well.
That's right, yeah, Laura worked with us as well. It was great. I was very honored to have the opportunity to put that record out with him, and we did our very best to get the most noise out that we could.
Just before he wound up with the release of The Storyteller, Randy Weston was a sugar guest when the book was out. So.
Right. And that's where I met you, was at Randy's party, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Yeah. One thing also about this label that I think should be mentioned is that I really have some amazing women that are helping me run this label. First off, I started the label with Susie Reynolds, who is a wonderful producer and is an artist manager as well. And she produced a beautiful record for Terry Thornton, who, if people haven't heard her, should definitely check out. And she engineered Terry's comeback, but unfortunately Terry died of cancer. And she kind of was a one-hit wonder in the 60s, and then Susie helped her, you know, come back. But Terry is one of the most amazing singers that ever hit the planet. Then Susie produced other wonderful records, and she helped me start the label and was an important part of us starting. And then right now I have running the label with me. I have Robin Thompson, who's been a music manager for over 30 years and involved in making Danilo Perez's career and worked with Jack DeJohnette and many, many of the jazz musicians. And Marianne Topper, who is, you know, legendary for having launched Diana Krall and launched Jane Monheit, worked with the New York Voices, many, many different. And plus, she also worked as an agency. Her agency handled almost everybody in Miles Davis's band. Not Miles, but all the ones, Tony Williams, all the people around, Ron Carter. So she's very knowledgeable. She's been in the business, I think, maybe 40 years. I think it might be that long. Very experienced. Now, I brought these two ladies on because just putting it out on the marketplace wasn't working. We really need to get our developing artists kind of managed, you know, working, and some of them didn't have managers. So I thought, well, we'll serve some of that function. And I also have Fanny Del Sol, who is, she used to work at Blue Note in France. She's worked 10 years there, you know, started off as an intern and became a major marketing person there. And then she moved to Brooklyn and decided that she wanted to be living here. And she's come on now. She's our marketing director. These three women and myself, and also Jana Lasort, who is our publicist.
Yes, Jana. We know Jana.
Jana actually worked with us to get Kit Shapiro for the Eartha Kitt show.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so Jana's wonderful. She's a real live wire, too. She just came on this year. I had before Carrie Goldberg was our publicist, who's based in Virginia, and I also greatly thank her for all the work that she did. Your publicist is a very important part of the team. So that's quite a number of women for an industry that's been fairly male-driven, although I have to say that this year I was looking at the Billboard Top 100 Women, and there's more and more women who are really shakers and movers in this business. But I have to say, I don't want to sound defeatist about this, but I thought in some ways that's partially because the salaries probably aren't as good as they once were, and also because you really need people who are going to dig in and work, you know,
right.
And there's not the big slush funds that there once was, you know. But I have some wonderful men working with us, too. I certainly am not limiting this to women. Ken Drucker, who's been working in the business for many, many years, is my general manager. And Haley Brauner is our digital marketing expert and our marketing manager. He's been doing some great, great work with us. So, you know, I really have a wonderful team here. It's been gelling in the last couple of years. And new website, actually, that just went up. Still adding some of our back catalog to that, but all the fresh stuff is there. And we have a great art director by the name of Becca Meek. So it's another woman working closely with us.
From what I noticed, the women that you do have are vocalists. Not all of them.
Lynn is a pianist, and Lakeisha is a saxophone player. She's a saxophonist.
Right.
One thing that is true is that our artists, almost all of them, are composers, and that's also by design. I really am interested in working with people who are expanding the art form. And there's a lot of playing of standards that goes on in jazz, and I don't have anything against it. It's just that this label is not for people to put out a record of standards. We don't really do that. They'll put out some standards, or we might do like an Eartha Kitt tribute. We might do a tribute of Jobim or something like that.
But even on the Eartha Kitt, Renee Marie wrote a song.
She did. She wrote an amazing song on there called Weekend that everybody should just get just to check that one out. Renee is one of the most like risky dames that I ever met. She will go places emotionally on stage that a lot of actresses would never go, you know, and you don't see a lot of jazz singers necessarily going in some of these arenas.
Right.
You know, she has that great show also, a one woman show that she did called Slut Energy Theory.
That's right.
The title is controversial. You know, we have this one pretty, this is a pretty fun project too, Roberta Donet's project, A Little Sugar.
Oh.
And this is music from the 1920s. And she got really fascinated by all the women singers of the 1920s and how they were all, in addition to being singers, they were basically feminists that really advanced the cause of feminism in a lot of ways without people really understanding it. Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey and Mae West, also you have to put her in that category, you know, people, very powerful women who, you know, had their own strong point of view.
Quickly, this is Empty Bed Blues by Roberta Donet and the Prohibition Mob Band from A Little Sugar, 2012 Motema Records release. Before that, we heard The Smart Set by Jerry Allen, Grand River Crossings, Motown, and Motor City Inspirations. There's Jerry Allen on piano and Marcus Belgrave on trumpet, 2013 Motema Records. Before that, we heard Maceo from Lakeisha Benjamin from Retox, her 2012 Motema Records release. And before that, we heard Spain, I Remembered, from Jana Herzen. Passion of The Lonely Heart. There's Jana Herzen on guitar and vocals and Charnette Moffett on acoustic bass. He plays electric bass on other recordings, not on that one. And that's from 2012 Motema Records. Stay tuned for more Roberta Donné. Apparently she has a new one coming out later this year, but we'll find out from Jana Herzen when she shares more with Sugar Mabo. My name is Joyce Jones. Stay tuned. Oh, and by the way, the playlist has been up on Sugar in My Bowl, so if you missed something in all of my ramblings, you can go to sugar, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, .org. Sugar in my bowl, .org.
Your smile, your touch, haunt each waking moment. I'm dreaming of you. I've been trying my best to erase in the past. I lost your favorite song, your photograph. And all that's left behind is a heart that's broke. Yes, it's mine. Well, tell me, tell me. Tell me what kind of fool holds on to love that's so, so taboo. Tell me what kind of fool wants every day to end up blue. Friends tell me there are bound to be blue skies ahead.
She does recordings from that period.
Yeah, and she also writes her own songs that fit right into that vibe. She has another one coming in this fall, which is going to be called Bathtub Gin.
Oh, okay.
And her motto is Party Like It's 1925. And she has a wonderful, it's a really, really solid jazz band that's with her. And she produced her own record, you know. And she's in the Bay Area, the opposite end of the spectrum. But she's also one of the lickettes in Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I know, it's like the opposite. She's a great percussionist, too, from playing percussion in that band and singing harmonies and stuff. Style is a kind of a straitjacket. And people, they like this style. Or they like that style. Now, those of us who play music, we don't like to be pigeonholed that we do this or that.
Right.
And I like to bring on artists who are very versed. It's like being versed in all the different international styles. This year we signed Ginger Baker, which I'm not.
I saw that and was. Wow.
Which, you know, I mean, I have to say Ginger is somewhat infamous. There's an amazing, amazing movie out there about called Beware of Mr. Baker.
Yes.
And he's a bit of an antisocial character, you know, so I'm not sure he fits that third thing about wanting to make the world a better place.
I think he hit the filmmaker.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. But, you know, it's kind of interesting, though, because he's a very authentic guy.
Yeah.
And apparently Elvin Jones, Art Blakey, Tony Williams, and I can't remember who the last one was, but four of the most influential, most authentic innovators of jazz gave him a thumbs up.
Right.
Because he learned his stuff from the African. He went directly to the African rhythms, and he fell in love with that. This, you know, English guy whose dad died in the war. And he had a rough upcoming, and he's a bit of a hooligan, and he's drugs, sex, and rock and roll. You know, that's him. But
so what's he going to do on Motema?
Well, he made the record already, and it's beautiful. We're just going to be sending it out. He worked with Fela Kuti. He lived in Fela Kuti's compound.
Uh-huh.
And what he does, he has an African percussionist himself. He has Alex Dankworth on bass, and he has Pee Wee Ellis on saxophone.
Wow.
And it's very Afrocentric jazz. So it really belongs right on it's in our wheelhouse for sure. I actually have looked at a bunch of videos online. I haven't met him. His agent and manager brought the project. He said, look, I have a sellout tour. Can you put this record out? I said, sure, we'll put it out. We'd love to. It's simple. It's spare. And he's an amazing drummer. And, you know, I had Michael Carvin in here, and I just asked him, I said, what do you think of Ginger Baker? He says, well, he was learning from the same books that I was learning from, and he's the real deal. He spoke very highly of him. And I thought, Wow. Michael Carvin, who's really one of the world's premier drumming teachers, is telling me that this guy is, you know. So it's an honor to have him on. He's a genuine rock star. I love Cream. I grew up listening to that stuff. And you watch the movie about him, and it's like he's very, you know, do I approve of his social behavior in certain circumstances? Not exactly, but do I approve of the fact that he is a really authentic guy who says exactly what's on his mind and is not kissing anybody's, you know what? Yeah, I like fierce people. And for me, being nice and fitting into the norm isn't the first priority for me. I'm not sure that he and I are going to get along, but I think we might, actually, because I could really appreciate his music. And I think at the bottom, now as a 75-year-old man, his salvation is playing the music. And you see that at the end of this movie, how much joy and love he has for playing. And he's a jazz musician who does not consider what he did in Cream to be rock and roll. It was just, you know, music. He plays music. And they played it fiercely. You know, he's world famous and interesting. For me, it's a great signing, you know. Ginger Baker coming out June 24th with his record.
So how does it feel in the case of, say, Gregory Porter? He was here at Motema, and you sort of cradled him and helped him along, and then he left to go somewhere else.
Well, I won't say that it felt great, and I saw it happening. I was actually, first of all, let me say about Gregory Porter, I love the talent.
Right.
And there's no hard feelings between us one way or another. And we have two of the most amazing records. We have Water.
Right.
And we have Be Good. And both those records sold well with us. They're both Grammy nominated, and they're selling very well now that he is getting a major, major promotion from Blue Note.
Right.
And the way that it all went down, I learned, was that he got a publishing deal with Jean-Philippe Allard, who runs publishing for Universal, and that's who brought them over to Universal. And then Universal bought EMI, and that's how he wound up on Blue Note.
Okay.
So it wasn't even Blue Note signing him away. It wasn't an American label signing away. And I wish that we could have had him. But in a way, I think it's exactly as it should be. I mean, Adele didn't get her fame either with her first label, which is a wonderful label. We're here to discover and build. And then if it gets to a certain point, you do need the clout of a label that has that type of distribution, that they can put that many products out there. I think if I can get my distributor to put 1,200 units out there for Gregory's record, probably would have been a lot for that first hit. And I bet you that Universal Blue Note had internationally, you know, major numbers out there. So it's just a scale. It's an economy of scale. And who knows, you know, the way things are going, he could be back with us one of these days. Anything could happen. You know, I just say, don't burn your bridges in this business. And, you know, I'm grateful. First off, I think he's grateful that we got him started. He's expressed that. And I really could close the doors, having just launched Gregory, I really could close the doors and feel like I did something really good for the world, because he really makes people feel great. And he's a very amazing vocal talent, you know, and I really do love vocals. I love great vocals and I hate bad vocals, you know, and that's just how it is.
Well, what do you have coming up?
It's an exciting year for us release-wise, and we have coming up, we just released actually this Rufus Reed project, which I think I mentioned earlier, which is a tribute to Elizabeth Catlett, and then we have Jacques Schwartzbart's Jazz Racine Haiti, and that is about the Haitian roots of jazz, and this is the first, probably the first time that we have had traditional Haitian voodoo singers performing with a jazz trio. And in some cases, jazz quintet. And it's been getting phenomenal feedback over there in France, because Jacques comes from quite a famous family.
So it's out now.
It is out now. And Jacques Schwartzbart, also based in Harlem here. He's a saxophone player. Monty Alexander has his second Harlem Kingston Express record coming out. That's his large unit, half reggae band, half jazz band. Really one of the most fun performances that you can see on the international jazz scene today. I'm completely in love with this act.
Yeah, Hank and I caught him at Winter Jazz Fest last year, I guess it was, in January.
And we have Arturo O'Farrell. This is the first time he's been with us on the label, and he's putting out his album called Offense of the Drum. And that's a star-studded thing, too, and it has a rapper. It has over 20 kinds of drums that are featured inside of it. And he also has Edmar Castaneda, the harp player. And he has DJ Logic on there. And he has Donald Harrison both playing and singing. And he's having a big, huge release party that's going to be at the Apollo. And it's a tribute to his father. And, in fact, Randy Weston will be playing in that event, too. That's on May 8th.
That's Chico O'Farrell is the father.
Yes, Lakeisha Benjamin is going to be at the Apollo Cafe on Friday, May 9th. And Arturo's big event at the Apollo Theater is going to happen on May 10th. We also have a real treat. It's off the side for us, but I really love this record. It's Caterina Zapponi. Caterina is the daughter of a filmmaker, one of the scriptwriters for Fellini.
Oh.
And she grew up in this, you know, sort of cafe society in both Italy and in France, where her mother was a chanteuse. And she does all these old world songs. And she has Bucky Pizzarelli with her and Frank Vignola, great guitar players. And she's actually married to Monty Alexander, and Monty produced this record. And it's a really special project, a little bit more in the cabaret sort of a zone than jazz, but really brings you back to this old world Italian and French songs and just beautiful stuff. David Weiss is coming out with his sextet. David Weiss is a trumpet player, and he's very well known on the scene for working with some of the older cats and tribute things. He helped Freddie Hubbard get out in his older years, and he
was working with the Cookers.
Yeah, David actually produced and plays in the Cookers, which has been, you know, Billy Hart, Billy Harper, George Cables. It's an all-star groupings of some of the sidemen who really made jazz in the heyday of jazz. And that's a group which has been going really great guns. So David's putting out his sextet project, which is his own compositions. That's coming in June. And then we have another Cookers record coming in the fall.
Oh,
so
excellent.
I'm really looking forward to that. That group has taken off like a jazz supergroup in the last couple of years.
When is Michael Carvin's release?
Michael comes out in August. And he also has a wonderful woman pianist in his band. She's quite remarkable.
Yes.
And we're actually going to be billing this as introducing Yayoi Ikagawa, because she's never recorded before, and she's something special. We have Awa Sango, who is from Ivory Coast. Well, she's from Mali, but she became quite famous in the Ivory Coast as part of a group called Lego de Koteba. And so this is her first time to put out her own album. And she's kind of like a female Salif Keita. She's very, very spiritually powerful, wonderful dancer, amazing presence. And we have Coco Jones coming out here. Now, Coco is actually... Do you know about Coco?
No. You were talking earlier. You had mentioned how Coco was Kevin.
Yeah. We actually... Coco is a percussionist, an amazing percussionist. Played with the Isley Brothers and played with Whitney Houston, Archie Shepp, bassist, Reggie Workman.
Uh-huh.
Many great jazz musicians, many great soul artists. And she came out as a woman. And she'd always, you know, been a woman, but always presented as a male. And so she's transitioned. And she's actually working at CUNY now as a counselor for LGBT issues. And it's quite a challenge for her. It's very, you know, it's an amazing story, a hard story in many ways. But she made quite an amazing record with Onaji Allen Gomes, and Babatunde Lee produced that. They've both known Coco Kevin since he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And she was a kid, and so that's an interesting story. I'm not sure exactly the release date on that. It just got bumped a little later, but we're planning to bring it out. I'm looking forward to that. And she's got a TED Talk coming up, so.
Oh, wow. Pretty interesting.
Also, we're putting out a project by Omer Avital, which was also released before in Europe, and we're licensing it just for the States. So it's a beautiful, beautiful record. Lovely compositions. Yeah, September we have this Omer Avital project coming, and he plays both the bass and oud. Very lovely stuff. And then we also have a lovely record with Ronnie Ben-Hur performing with Lenny Andrade.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. That's an
oh,
oh
my
wow.
Gosh, yes.
It's a duo project. He's gone to Brazil. He recorded it in Brazil with her. And she particularly picked him out and said, please, let's do a duo together. So that's a real breakthrough for Ronnie. I think it's a lovely, very, very deep record. So those are, I think, our highlights for right now to share.
All right. Anything else you want to tell the listeners before we... move along?
Well, first off, thank you so much. You know, it's nice to talk on Sugar in My Bowl. It's a great title. Love it. And, you know, it's a very challenging time for the music industry, and I do hope that people will come and join the mailing list on our website, which is motema.com, motema.com, and also join us on Facebook and Twitter. We have contests, and we do send out free MP3 samples of the releases as they come out, so it's really worth joining. You'll hear what's happening. We have a lot of interesting events that are going to be happening through the year. I'm starting to do a certain amount of live promotion in the New York area. There are some great events coming up. This thing at the Apollo, I was saying, with Arturo Ofero and with Lakeisha also in May, and lots of great release parties and things. And, you know, we're a cultural institution. I don't think of us just as a record label. And to keep something like this afloat is not really a joke. It's a lot. And I think that in the long run, just as in other cultural institutions like Jazz at Lincoln Center, they can't sell on tickets alone or CD sales alone. We have to invent new ways to support the label. And I think I'm very likely going to be starting some type of a not-for-profit arm that will give us the opportunity to raise funds and find sponsors and things like that to give young creative geniuses that opportunity, like somebody like Gregory Porter, who is coming out with something new, and that was his debut record, and to really be able to get heavily behind somebody like that, and also somebody like Rufus Reed, who's in his later years as a still young, he's only 70 this year, right? Give him a chance to put out a new piece of music, you know, which is really probably not going to be a major commercial opportunity for me, but I am so proud to be able to offer the platform to get this out. The news of people's work gets out, and then they get out on the road and they start playing, and it keeps this music vibrant. And so if you have any interest in helping us to build or support or have ideas of places where people might play, one thing that we've started doing is concerts for corporations and things like that. If you have ideas, please, you know, write into, go to motema.com, hit the info at motema.com, and hit us up with some info and any ideas or any thoughts, or, you know, we love to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much, Jana Herzen, for all this time that you spent with us.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And I guess I'll be doing some performing out there, too. So come on out and hear some music.
Yay!
All right. We've got Motema's MVP in the background, Mark Carey, from the Mark Carey Focus Trio. Four Directions is the name of the release. Mark Carey on piano, Samir Gupta on drums, Bernice Earl Travis II on acoustic bass on this recording. Rashawn Carter is on other recordings. We'll be following this up with Gregory Porter from Be Good Bling Bling. This Motema, Mark Carey's Focus Trio, was released in last year, 2013, and Be Good was released in 2012. And thank you, Jana Herzen. Wasn't that enlightening? I mean, really. Wow, amazing. And I'm sure we will see more from the Motema Library. Let's listen to Mark Carey and Gregory Porter, and you'll see us, hear us, on April 6th, because we're off next week. You'll be hearing M. Saidia McLaughlin with Sports Qualified. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. La Nueva Alternativa coming up next. Thank you.
rich and love is all poor and everything that makes the matter. I've got gifts to give, but no place for those gifts to live. Like diamond hearts and golden dreams, my song is just like bling bling. Rich in love and so poor in everything that makes love matter. I've got gifts to give, but no place for those gifts to live. I've been dismissed by those who like cream on top of cream. I scream, bling, bling.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.